All right, we are.
Okay, so let's call to order the regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, February 9th, 2017. First order of business is to approve tonight's agenda. Do I have a motion? Motion by Commissioner Gildersleeve and a second by Commissioner Von Trapp. Any comments or changes? The chair has one. Add a number six, consideration of a new downtown mixed-use zone. Resolution. Consideration of a new downtown mixed-use zone resolution.
You're wanting to add that to the agenda?
Yes. That's number six. Any other comments or changes? All those in favor of the updated agenda say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. It's unanimous. Just a point of order. At the last meeting, the commission was discussing some thoughts on how things were going, whether or not we were being as proactive, whether as a planning, or how we were either revising documents or proposing changes of content to them. I kind of internalized that, and I'll just give you my personal feedback. And what I'd like to do is take that packet we get and have time to digest it and compare it to other codes that I might have in mind or think about how it applies to our city, talk to other citizens. That takes a lot of time, and I can only do that in my current state. I don't expect I can give as much time as I do in the future, but that's how I can come up with those thoughtful kind of policy ideas that I can sometimes put forth. I'm not saying that we all have to do that dedication, but I'm not saying also that we're just here to edit documents, that we are here to be the voice of the citizens and to propose those changes. That said, we want to think about how it applies to the whole city and not just one part of our town. And that's my only other point. Yes, sir.
I have just a general comment, because it's kind of like what that was. For me, it would help at the end of our meetings if we could talk about what the next meeting is going, what the agenda items will be. And I think there were, at one point, was a list of like topics throughout the years, and maybe it's a new year. Maybe
yeah, we do typically do that at some point at the beginning of the year. Usually it's around now that we talk with the Planning Commission about this is our work program for the year ahead. We just haven't got there yet.
Yeah, like, so basically it would be two things, like that for 2017, which is going to shift, so that's only so useful, but then to further revise it, just at the end of each meeting, what we might be looking at, because I always feel like this stuff just shows up. It's fine reviewing it, but I don't understand why it's. I just like that one heads up, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'll change a whole lot.
Thank you for your thoughts.
We do have a very busy work program for you guys for the coming year. Uh-huh. The council's suggested a number of amendments to zoning that they'll want you to take up. So there's quite a few cottage related, multifamily related, design standards related. What else am I missing? A number of things. Dockets as well. We've got some dockets that we'll need to come to.
I expect dockets would have to be soon, right? Don't they?
Yeah.
They're like first of the year.
We're trying to be efficient and wrap them up with the zoning, some of the zoning discussions that council had. So we weren't doing it twice.
Got it. Okay. Now, if that's done, approval of minutes for January 26, 2017 Planning Commission meeting. Do I have a motion?
I've read them, and I concur. Okay.
Motion by Commissioner Ryan, and a second. Second by Commissioner Von Trapp. Any comments or changes? I have one correction. On line 43 and 44, there's a note about the chair and Commissioner Ryan that will be unable to attend the next scheduled meeting of the Planning Commission. I believe that was also Commissioner Von Trapp, and that was in regards to the February 23rd meeting. That would make the minutes correct, and I am announcing to the Planning Commission that I will actually be here on the 23rd and able to attend.
So, just to note, when we make the correction, the correction will still note that you said that you were gone, because that's what happened then.
Correct. So it should read that unable to attend the February 23rd.
Okay, we'll make that correction.
and include Commissioner Von Trapp.
There's just, I don't know, it's, I think it's supposed to say 2017 at the bottom, like, footer.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
I wasn't there.
January updates. Okay, any other comments or changes? All those in favor of approving the updated minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. It's unanimous. Next item of business is public comment on non-agenda items. Seeing no member of the public, I would like to invite all who are listening as members of the public to attend our meetings and share their voices, whether you're concerned about growth or lack thereof, or housing, or zoning, or anything we're discussing, to come and attend our meetings. That said, item number four is Planning Commission deliberation and recommendation amendments to Parks Element, Parks Capital Facilities Plan, and Park Element Maps. Mr. McCarty.
That was my awesome dad. I snuck out twice trying to get a latte on the way here with people that had closed early. And found one open.
Thank you. So sweet. So, yeah, the Parks Element, we last reviewed this with you back in December, and it took a little bit of time because the GIS staff that we have only has 8 hours a week, so he's balancing a lot of other projects and wasn't able to get to these until recently. So that's also why we were hand-delivering them to you at tonight's meeting, and they're on your desk. So there was one amendment that you had recommended in the document itself, and that was on page 26, you had suggested adding park orientation and identification signage to our capital facilities plan. So that is on there. We added that. The commission had also discussed... I think it was Elizabeth's suggestion to talk about a policy on ADA compliance for trails. And we talked about that in with staff and looked into it a little bit further. And ADA is actually required for everything except for a very, very few limited circumstances when you're in the, basically out in nature on a natural hiking trail where topography would otherwise preclude you from being able to meet ADA. You're otherwise required for any public trail to meet ADA access. So we didn't feel like a policy was necessary because we just have to do it. So therefore, we didn't provide a policy in the Parks Element. Just wanted to let you know about that. The Parks Element maps, you didn't see it at your last meeting. You saw just kind of our red line version, but you actually have the maps now.
Would it be objectionable to the city to just state up front in the opening part of the document that ADA is applicable wherever possible, that sort of cover that base?
We can do it. The other reason that I didn't want to have to do it is right now the only amendments that are going forward to council are the Parks Capital Facilities Plan and the map. So if we add something else to the Parks Element, we're opening up the whole Parks Element, and it's just a much more complicated review for them, and I would much rather just bring those two things forward. It's a smoother process, but that's the will of at the will of the commission.
So. Given that I was one that brought up, and I did appreciate you reaching out to give me a heads up about that, the change and the suggestions and recommendations. But if it is included, and it is something that is going to be required of anything that the city does anyway, it does make sense to me. It's there. And I don't know that we need to explicitly call it out. My concern would be if we use the wrong language and something changes, we then have to go back to change how we're referring to it. It is something that if we see changes in the law that don't maintain consistent access for people that live in the area to be able to use our parks, then we might want to revisit it at some future point to include that kind of language. But when it was fully explained, I agreed that just not adding that to the mix made sense for that
Elizabeth,
reason.
You know I respect you. Mm-hmm. But I do keep reminding myself that we see these documents often, we're accustomed to them, but for a person who's reading for the first time, mm-hmm. They don't have all that background. They may be curious about that particular issue, but they don't, not seeing any reference to it, makes them ask further, where do I find out this information? That's all I'm saying, because I know where you're coming from on that. I certainly respect that.
Well, and I think that's where we can maybe address that through how, you know, this issue of signage and what is called out. When someone is trying to find out about our parks, I think they often go to the city website and the information that's there. And that may be somewhere that is more public friendly to include language that calls out ADA accessibility of various parks versus burying it in the parks element that's really more intended for the official builders and people coming in and doing projects to review as a guideline. So I think that we actually addressed that when we were talking about the signage, if I'm recalling that conversation in full correctly, to address things like that in the signage at the parks themselves. So, and the website, I think, would be another place to do that, because I agree with you. Making sure that the public, if they have curiosity about that, even something down to the, hey, I want to go take a walk, what is the actual distance of that loop? It encourages the people that live here, and actually some of the visitors that come in, to know what our facilities can do for them and provide to them. And that may be the direction. At least that's where I was thinking after conversations about whether or not it was appropriate to put that in the parks element.
I like your perspective.
So, Mike, to Elizabeth's point, what about doing something on the website where we have icons or something that we talk about, you know, what's accessible by wheelchair, what is some semi, you know, passable by what means or something? Is that a possibility?
It's a possibility, yeah. It's that's something that we could do when we come up with our overall sign program. That'll be, you guys are familiar with what the decision cards are. That's how you propose something to the council that's outside of their normal, you know, have to pay for this kind of thing. It's a decision on extra budget. And what we do is we bring forward a proposal to the council about, here's a program of sign improvements that we want to do. And as a part of that, we could do, for example, to hire somebody, because if we're just saturated staff-wise, to update our website to provide similar information on the website.
Okay. Would that be acceptable?
Absolutely. I'm glad that you looped back to that, because that's where I was headed with it. I got that conversation started a little bit early, maybe earlier than it might have happened.
So, does anybody object?
No? I don't object. The ADA sounds familiar, but it applies to me, so it's not something I'm familiar with. I think that applies to everybody in this room. And kind of a weird analogy. I mean, I'm driving along the highway. I see a rest area. I know what that rest area implies, right? I know that there's going to be a bathroom, I know that there's going to be vending machines. Like, that's all kind of in the package of, because I've been to restrooms before or rest areas before, I know what to expect. So if somebody sees somebody who the ADA does apply to and they see public park, does that also carry implications that we don't necessarily need to overly advertise?
I don't think it's about the park as much as it's about the trail that's at the park.
It
could be a listing of conditions of various trails. If you're looking for rugged trails, here's our city trails that would meet that. ADA accessible trails that we have right now. Now there's your list.
And similar for parks. I think that there can often be an assumption with regard to ADA needs. They're very wide ranging. I'm not just talking about people that are very clearly, when you look at them, they're in a wheelchair or using an assistive device. There are a lot of people out there that may need to know that they have a smooth pathway to walk on because they have other mobility issues that may not be overtly obvious when you look at them. And they're used to the shorthand, so, you know, there are ways to do this so that they know that this is a park I can go to. You have parents who have children that have special needs in terms of what they can interact with. And having that information easily accessible to people simply makes it so that everyone that is part of our community can enjoy those parks in a very easy way. It doesn't become a let's go there and see if it works, or let's start on that pathway and then find out that halfway there it changes to gravel and I'm going to fall over if I walk that, for someone who has mobility issues. So I think that it is an important thing to do, because there are a lot that you aren't going to know if you look at them, that there's some issue. This just makes that information available.
Okay.
One of the other things that the commission had recommended that I didn't put into the staff report until last minute was a recommendation that the commission provided back at your December meeting about crossings. So the discussion, I think it came from Dick, was about provide a recommendation to the council to provide improvements to the safety for crossing at the Snoqualmie Valley Trail, because we've got a lot of people crossing there. It's at a weird angle. It's coming in at another weird angle from Tanner Road, and it's just not a great situation. And so there was a recommendation that the commission had provided to lower the speed limit from 50 to 40, and then also a recommendation to provide crossing improvements. So I handed out a revised staff report that's in front of you, and I added number 12, and then number 13. And I was talking with Gary earlier, so Gary, maybe you could introduce this, but an idea for also at Mount Si Road.
Yeah, if you thought back to last summer, and there were multiple weekends that cars were parked up and down North Bend Way, so people could access Mount Si and Little Si trails, and they're crossing a 40-mile-an-hour road. I think it behooves us to be wise to those who are visiting our city to have their safety in mind, and so I would like to see some improvements there for a safer crossing. And if possible, there's some landscaping improvements, whatever we could deem, but most importantly, it would go along the same lines of pedestrian safety.
The additional things in that issue of crossing is the general parking arrangement that's allowed. Shelter right now. You know, any organized parking is parked where you can find it, get to the starting line. I think the more we can control the activity in that area, the less resistance of travelers coming through. They'll know what to expect. But there's living on Tanner Road, knowing the angle that road approaches the North Bend Way, when you have a row of cars blocking the oncoming traffic, the westbound traffic, it's suicidal trying to get out there. So I would, you know, have no parking on certain areas when there's an event going on, not just day-to-day walking, but when we have a, you know, bike marathon or something going on, where we have a lot of traffic. We actually have crossing guards and signs posted up where park is not allowed for road safety. I think that needs to be in the contract, whenever you guys contract for these things, there's those.
Yeah, we have special events permits that we issue for things like that, and those typically have conditions on policing and traffic safety and so forth that we would address situations like that.
And it's been my experience being a road guard at one of the jazz fests in Boxley's. I thought my job was to stop traffic crossing there between Coastville State and Boxley, so I would get to my side and stop traffic. And I was told by a police officer in the most definite way, says, you don't have the authority to stop traffic. You're just here to keep the people from walking into the traffic, or stop people from moving into the crosswalk until it's free. Then encourage them, but you can't stop traffic. So evidently, when you're in this situation where you have a paid event, when the city's being paid, there are rules against stopping traffic on a state road. North Bend Way, I believe, is not a city road. It's a state road.
North Bend Way is a city road. So Bendigo 202 is a state road.
Is it really? Okay. That's something I didn't know. But I think the police rules still apply. You can't stop traffic without some kind of authority from the police to do that. So there's a lot of detail in this thing. Once we get used to the detail, we will do it. But to walk there and to live there, see the sea, I've seen out with three or four marathons, it is helter-skelter. It drives me crazy that nothing's happened bad or bad past, because it's all there.
So I don't want to lead the commission. I just wanted to offer this as following from your conversation, Gary. So if the commission would like to see that, you probably should offer a motion to see if that's the will of the commission, and then if the staff report would reflect that. Otherwise, we can
just amend
the staff report. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll make a motion to include item number 13 in our summary findings in the park element as written. Can I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Motion and a second by Commissioner Gildersleeve. And as already stated before the motion, that in an effort to increase the safety around all the activity that we have, recreational uses around Mount Si Road, this would provide those safer crossing areas for people who are parking on North Bend Way.
I mean, do we need to write in that it's, it coincides with the control trail development creation, or is that just assumed? Because it's not just about putting, you know, it should be incorporated with the design of the parking and where the trail comes out. And,
well, right? this is on North Bend Way, so it's a half mile, mile, whatever distance from the actual trailhead that people are parking up and down North Bend Way.
When you're talking about Mount Si?
So Mount Si Road. If you look at the end of number 13, it says the Planning Commission recommends these improvements be added to the Transportation Capital Improvement Plan when that's next amended. The reason for that is it's not really a parks issue. Right now you guys are considering the parks element, but you could include this recommendation that helps us to think when we're next amending the transportation element. There is an important, there is a transportation issue that's important to the Planning Commission.
Okay. So yeah, are you clear what I was thinking about?
If you're clear on 13, I guess it's 12.
So, oh, 12, not 13?
12.
Yeah, well, that's...
We want 12 and 13.
Yeah, well, so North Bend Way is right here, and then Mount Si Road, Southeast Mount Si Road, right here. And so we have cars that were parking up and down North Bend Way, and then the pedestrians were walking across Mount Si Road there. And then where Commissioner Ryan is talking about is the trail that comes across right here. And so it's 50 miles an hour, and people were walking across the road.
I think just to add to number 12, it might be, I think you had signalized crossing or something, did you, in 13?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what we had discussed. It could be any number of things, but I'm just saying it should probably be incorporated with when, because there's going to be a certain path they're going to direct people onto the road. That's all I'm saying. So that's where you just want to make sure that it's all incorporated at one time, not just let's go out next year and put that in for the people that are there now. And then, I don't know.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a standard that we have for 35 mile an hour and above crosswalks that are lighted, or is that just in my mind that I wanted to do that?
I'm not familiar with it. Honestly, it's really a public works issue. But there is a maximum speed that you can have when there's a crosswalk. I think there are differences if it's a signalized crosswalk, though, because then the light can turn red and people can cross.
Because there's one on East Lake Sammamish that I think is 35, and it lights up with a stop to traffic.
The bicycling and hiking traffic, consider that entire area as an interchange. They don't just cross where the trails cross and the roads cross. They'll break across North Bend Way right there when it gets to the end of the timberline. Way ahead of the original crossing, they just seem to cross where they have a line to. Wherever they feel a traffic break, they just dodge across. So they don't really stay on the Snoqualmie Trail. They just consider the whole area as a crossing junction, so we need to find a way to get a handle on that to make it more specific and direct it, because no one really knows.
More predictable for drivers. And
we already included 12 and 13 out
yes.
here.
12 yes. was from your prior meeting. The commission had recommended 12 already.
So we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion on item number 13? Okay, all those in favor of adding item number 13 to the summary findings, say aye.
Aye.
The motion carries. It's unanimous. Okay, now, Mike, did you have any more introduction to do?
Yeah, so the map. This is based on edits that were provided through a number of processes. So we met with Mountain San Greenway Trust, a number of other agencies to think about what are our trail connections within the city and out of the city to other recreational areas. Based on staff input, and then also based on the recommendations from the Planning Commission. You recall back in December you recommended separating out the bicycle plan map from the trail plan map so that they're a little bit more clear and not too much information all in one space. So we've made those edits, cleaning up the maps, just additional edits to reflect newer parks, newer acquisitions. We've made a number of connections that weren't on the maps previously to get you up, for example, up to the new Dahlgren, not Dahlgren, the new Heartland property, which is south of I-90, going up under the Rattlesnake Mountain area.
It looks like they've acquired the former hotel site.
No, that's not a part of it there.
It's different.
Okay.
What it is it's the property that's immediately north and west of the apartments. What are the name of those apartments?
Yeah.
Rock Creek Ridge.
Okay. I'm just missing
north and east.
Yeah, I'm just missing that.
Oh, it's west, right. Video.
Good. Has there been any kind of announcement about that? Because there does seem, again, those the social media things,
yeah.
There seems to be a lot of confusion about what property is what and what's going on, and I think that some were thinking that the conversations about that property indicated it was being developed, and it doesn't seem that many are aware of the new
property. Right, so there has been some public discussion of it, I believe. I don't know if it was a council member or someone else mentioned it at the Banff Film Festival. So there's been some pretty public announcements of it, but it's been kept kind of hush. It's been a little bit, at first it was kept quiet because Trust for Public, TPL was in the process of negotiating, so the developers asked that we didn't discuss it. And then up until now, not all the funds were secured, certain. There wasn't 100% certainty of the funds. We were short $250,000. Which didn't seem like a lot after getting $2 million, but it was critical to get it all. And council just recommended to sign the lease with the option to purchase. So it would be a lease for $1 or something, and then when it expires, that's when the city would purchase it, and it's set to expire in March. And that's when TPL would like the transaction made. So it looks like that's going to be approved at their next council meeting. And then after that, it'll be celebrated more and provided some clarity on it. I think everyone's really excited to celebrate it and to have a really positive and what a lot of people hopefully view as a win for the city. So we're hopeful to start doing that.
Thanks
for the information.
Yeah, it is a really exciting
One other note I wanted to share is on the last figure 8.4, that's the bicycle route map. We didn't previously have figure 8.4, and the idea was to separate it out from the rest of the trail plan map. In doing that, we looked at the bicycle routes, and staff felt that it was way too busy. We had routes going everywhere and through neighborhoods that didn't really go to a destination. So our thought is to clean that up and just focus on the key bicycle routes, the routes that are most important to get you to key destinations on the road. So we're not talking about off-road bike routes or mixed-use or multi-use trails, but these are where there's bike lanes or bike charros. And so we simplified the map considerably, and that way that'll give us more direction when it comes to providing city projects. These are the areas that we want to spend our dollars to make the most impact.
Mike, is the main road to the uplands, is that a public access or a private gated road?
The main one through is a public road.
Public road. It's not gated.
No.
Pretty steep.
There's gates on side roads, but not the one that goes straight up.
So that would get all the way back to the old Cedar Falls dump?
Yeah.
Site.
Yep, it connects into Wilderness Rim.
Yeah.
So and then you'd have to go.
That's now public access. I was certain at one point it was a gated environment.
It may have been gated at one point. Right now, if you go up it, there's kind of some horseshoe loops that go off that are gated, mm-hmm. but you can, actually, Jenna and I biked up there the other day, so you can get through.
So improving this route up to that gate is
And right now, it doesn't actually go up to a gate. That's the route is stopping there because at that point, and that's something you can discuss, but up to that point, that's where there's more higher volume of traffic. So it made more sense to have them separated from the vehicles. And then once you get past that, there's less volume of traffic. There's some landscaping medians that slow down traffic, and it makes sense for a biker to merge in with traffic.
Yeah.
And kind of to add on to what Mike pointed out, we took a lot of the residential routes off of here also because On streets that don't see the higher speeds or the higher volume of traffic, a cyclist can comfortably join in and be part of the movement of flow of traffic, so you don't need the infrastructure there to signify that. So this, the streets that we've called out as needing improvements to be safer and a safer experience, a more enjoyable experience, have either higher speeds for vehicles or higher volumes. So on the higher speed streets, they're separated with a bike lane, so they wouldn't be in the same lane as the traffic. And then when it's a slower speed but still high volume, that's when there would be something that signifies share the lane, whether it's a share-o or a lot of cities are going to signs now that say cyclists share. It basically just says cyclists share the road with vehicles.
You can't take them off the roads, but boy, I tell you, I just about rear-ended a biker. He was right in the fog line. Mm. It's a very narrow strip on West North Bend Way.
Right.
Right by the old dairy farm. You know, right in the fog line.
Yeah.
Because there was too much gravel.
Mm-hmm.
Damn it. I just could barely catch him at the last before I got on him.
Right. And so that's what a bike lane would do, is a bike lane provides, they're typically 5 feet in width, and that doesn't include the extra foot of curb or whatever goes on beyond, so the gravel and whatever debris that gets swept off goes can get out of the lane, so a cyclist can be comfortable.
And that area is a dish line anyways. It's not,
right, so,
not a big surface.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, he was riding, when he couldn't ride in the Valley Trail, mm-hmm. free and clear, he probably was going back on a different road, but anyway, he was riding. He was flying with the flow of traffic. I wish he'd been there, so.
I appreciate your story. Just real quick, so when we're looking at these red lines, these are to be developed? Okay. And whether they're city done or they're a mix of funding sources, right, or they're privately done. Mm-hmm. I remember some discussion on Cedar Falls Way being like a 6 foot wide multi-use trail, but is it bike and a multi-use trail, or is it just one trail system? Like, how do we interpret it, right?
So what this map is showing is on street features only. It's either a bicycle lane or a share-o.
So in addition to that, we could still have a 6 foot wide multi-use trail on Cedar Swamp.
Okay. Yeah, I believe that's still the intent. The thought is with the on-street bike lanes is that cyclists, you know, the 6 foot path is great for family or people that are going for a more leisurely ride, but someone that's going like a road rider, that they typically travel with traffic, mm-hmm. so they can go faster. And
And then the thought where you're not including residential, but you're not including connections that may go off road. Is that because road riders will stay on the road, or, you know, why not, if they connect to a bigger system, include that or a note to that map where you can find the rest of the trail? I guess is what I'm thinking.
They largely are two separate user groups. I talked with Jenna about this, and Lynn's a big biker too, but Jenna's really almost a professional bicyclist.
Sure.
She goes in a lot of races and so forth. And she says, what she said was that the on-road biker is just looking for efficiency. They want to get to point A to point B with as minimal turns and driveways and things to watch out for as possible. So they're looking for the bike lane in the share-o. Whereas the recreational user, you know, the kids, family out for a weekend kind of thing, they're looking for more than the multi-use trail.
I get that, and I agree with it 100%. I'll ride from my home on the street to the Snoqualmie Trail and up to Rattlesnake Lake. And so to me, that's a use of both systems of on and off road. And I'm wondering, you know, for families and people who are going to ride with their kids and especially go up to the lake,
right.
How do we give them a comprehensive one thing to look at?
So let me see if I hear what you're saying correctly. There's a couple different things that I heard. One is whether or not this system is connecting on road to our off road. And one of the things that we did look at was to make sure, for example, there is a bike proposed bike lane to get to the new Heartland site. And we have that because a lot of the desire of what we're working on is bringing the public land and all these great amenities that we have. How do we bring them into the community, and how do we make it so the community can go out onto the trails without getting into their car and have that be this really nice movement that can be made? So we did look at connecting, having bike lanes to these areas. For example, the Heartland site, we have one that goes out towards the Middle Fork Road. Again, we can only put them within our jurisdiction, so once it gets past that, we have to work with the adjacent ones. So I think that the goal is to be able to have those work together. I heard you mention the residential streets. Again, we didn't put infrastructure on the residential streets.
Do you understand? Okay. Yeah, so we're going from there.
Right.
We go on to that red line, and then we're going
to the I think they should all work together. I agree with you. And, of course, there's the road riders that maybe they're out to go for circuit on just roads.
Yeah.
But then there's the people. But this, what we made note of when we were thinking about this is a planning document. This isn't something that you would give. The intent of this map is not to give it to a visitor that comes into the city and say, here are our only bike routes in town. So if there's a visitor map that needs to be created that shows, you know, our favorite routes.
All the routes, but
right. And then it puts people on residential roads, and maybe that's part of your signage system where you have a biker that's pointing this way and then it leads you around the residential loop. Maybe that's what it is, but we didn't...
I got it. I buy that where this is the planning document.
Right.
It's not what I'm thinking in my end mind of how we give to citizens to communicate, here's where all you can go.
Right.
So that's two separate things. So I'm fine.
However, that would be very nice.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe we ought to talk to the bike store in town.
And to circle back when we're talking about making use of the websites. I think that is a common thing that people go to figure out what they're going to do,
right.
Whether it's someone that lives in the community or a visitor. So having a similar thing, yes, maybe we have something that
right.
can be handed out.
Are we getting a communication person on? Isn't there a decision card for a communication person? I know Councilmember Elwood is working on something for communications to do that, to how do you get more information to the public, and that might be something that I'm not sure exactly what his scope was, though.
Well, I also know from the Middle Fork Coalition that I'm on for the Mountains of Sound Greenway, they're looking to point to our website for some things, the city's website for some mm-hmm. things, and so the more that we can provide drives traffic to our website and enhances our town, right? So I just think all these ideas you're coming up with are great, so maybe we can put them all together and get somebody into some of that work.
Mr. Chair, I'm really on my lip over talking about technology, but I'm going to try. Is it possible to actually put electronic markers on the trail so people are on their bikes with GPS and actually just follow the marker?
I would think that you could get a map electronically, yes. I would think it would have to be on something that could get satellite signal, though, yeah.
Exactly.
Especially like in our mountains, they get lost. Cell signals get lost. That's the only thing I'm thinking about. But that's outside our purview.
No, but not from the Parks Commission. They would think about things like that.
They could. Yeah, think about how to digitally access our parks. I think that's in line with the next generation, sadly.
So that provides an overall introduction to you guys. And we'd be looking for your recommendation on this so that we can bring it forward to the council.
Okay. Does anybody have any other questions about the maps or the chair or the trails?
Question.
On
8.2, I was just wondering if there's near the Tannerwood Park, there's a... the west, and there's the future city park.
Oh, that was an error. That needs to come off. Thanks for noticing that.
I was going to like 32 homes there.
Yeah.
It's our new sledding hill right now.
Is that where everybody was going? I've seen these pictures.
We need to label Heartland. We don't know, I guess, what we're calling it.
Yeah, we'll remove that. Thanks for noticing.
On our website, we make reference to a Dahlgren Park.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not shown on here yet because it's not public, but what that is it's the property that's immediately west, southwest of the Tanner Landing Park in King County.
And it's an old family name from our Elizabeth. Are we
I was just trying to finish up on the maps, and then we'll do that. Anything further on our maps? We can certainly come back to them. But if not, I will open up to Commissioner Ryan. You want to talk about the document?
I got a little bit rough in my language with staff, and I apologize for that. But I did have time to read this, and it's on page 21. So we're talking about the City Hall Park. It finally dawned on me that we're talking about providing space for outdoor concert in that area. And I really want to caution the city from going through with that. I think it's nice that we have the city grounds and we have areas for people to walk through, but we are talking about a major residential community on Cedar Falls Road, both sides. We're talking about roads that take traffic, but they don't take concert traffic, aren't intended to. I'm thinking about the mess that the tribe got into when they had those outdoor concerts and the noise that goes right there in the city. We don't need a concert venue there. We have concert venues at Little Side. We have concert venues everywhere. We don't need one there.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The outdoor concerts was just the carryover from when that was being considered downtown, so that can certainly come off. The idea is that the City Hall Park is just kind of a multi-use space that can be used for a number of different public events, but there are neighborhoods right next door.
I mean, really, it would just be so hard, and so I just hope that language is full. And then I happened to observe the city council meeting on the TV this morning. I was watching it. And a particular citizen got my attention. I don't know his name. He made multiple comments. A very large man, very articulate, lives on Cedar Falls Road. And he said two things. He said, protect the trees on the Cedar Falls side of the city plaza, protect the trees. Don't sell them for convenience, protect the trees. And then he also said, please do not provide an access, a through access from the city hall onto the City Falls Road. Make the access off of the way where the traffic density is, adding more traffic on the City Falls Road for people visiting the city hall adds more traffic count to the neighborhoods unnecessarily. So I would like to echo his comments. It just struck me that he was so right about that. One thing to have residential traffic, but if you have other business type traffic coming in through there, when you just easily be directed through off the North Bend Way, that would save a lot of traffic counts on that road that would not have to be there.
Commissioner Ryan, I thank you for your thoughts, and I was at that meeting, and I did talk with our Public Works Director, and he informed me that the document that had any drawings in it were not official and were just only superficial drafts and not a final design, and he would certainly be willing to share it with us for our input, or, you know, doesn't see why we couldn't do something off of North Bend Way. I kind of think it should be both. There should be two ways in and out. You know, that way you can provide a quicker, you know, relief after a meeting. So just to let you know, and I also spoke to that gentleman, and he knows.
Well, it seems to be suitable for the maintenance crew to come and go off one entrance way. They have heavy equipment, things like that. It seems like maybe that's the reason why they should go on to Cedar Falls. So I'm just saying he didn't get any nod from anybody. He made the comment, and no one picked up on it and started talking, they just dropped it. So I wanted to pick it up here and make sure we understood.
I think that was because it's not a final design.
Yeah.
And there's been no movement towards one way or the other. So it wasn't worth other than the design is not final. And I thought that was said at the meeting. If it wasn't said during the meeting, it was said after to them.
All right. I'm on record.
Okay. All right. So you were talking about removing concerts.
Yeah, for a concert, the last three words of the paragraph.
Okay. so public meetings and outdoor concerts. Anybody disagree? No?
All right.
Is that going to be, did that City Hall going to be scaled on two levels or one level?
I don't know.
City Hall. It hasn't been decided yet.
I think they're talking about two levels or one level.
They've been talking about both, either. So a lot of it's going to depend on the cost and the site plan and a number of factors.
But public meeting place, manageable. I mean, in terms of public hearings, things like that, there's going to be plenty of space for the public to
be. Certainly, yeah. They'll have a large council chambers room.
And I believe a lot of designs included in an area where you could open up to expand capacity for standing. I think they had some really thoughtful designs.
Because we need to remember we're going to be triple the size here in about 10 years, population-wise. We just need to build for it.
Yeah, will all city offices be there too? You guys can.
Mm-hmm, that's the intent of it.
It's going to consolidate everything, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Yeah. Improve efficiency and just allow us to work together easier.
Yeah.
We are talking about our parks element. I wonder if we could consider taking the community economic development building and converting that for public use in some way.
It is. It has to have public use by the deed on the property, so it will always remain public.
I think about
public purpose.
I think it was Carnation that has like a building. I don't know if it's always this way. During the parade, they did like a mom and newborn kind of nursing station or walk-in thing. Maybe we can provide it for homeless outreach, something like that. Should that be in the parks element? Is to think about the future use of that.
It's not really a park. Facility. So there will be a process to determine what the use is to that building.
Just thinking out loud. Okay. Anything further, Commissioner Ryan? I'm sorry to jump in on you.
No, Mr. Chair. This fine. I just got this. I just want to make sure got here.
Great.
Lynn was noting that we've got some numbers that have changed a little bit on the Heartland property acquisition. Mm-hmm. So we'll either need to change those numbers or just broaden out the language to not have reference specific numbers.
Okay.
I would go for the latter on that. So if you guys don't mind, we'll correct that before it goes to council.
When we talk about particular uses in these parks, I'm a born-again zipliner. That's for my first zipliner. And it seems to me this Heartland Park is a perfect venue for zipping. What do you think, Will?
I think it's interesting you say that, because you're not the first one to say it. Actually, SciView is interested in doing something like that out there. We have to be careful with what we do out there, because the King County Conservation Futures Grant, which provided $1 million for the project, carries with it language that has to be passive recreation. And when you say, is ziplining passive recreation? They say it's kind of a fuzzy line. But I think that's a good recommendation, and as long as only X amount can be developed, so you have to plan your design accordingly, but it's a good I think it's a good recommendation, yeah.
Let me tie this in. I went up to the, I think it's the Kiefhofer Ranch, a dairy ranch up in Stanwood. They're being supported by the Skagit CD, because what they're doing there, they're giving a small forest, you know, initiation of a large tree, small trees, spacing, so on. So people who go up there are getting a little bit of education on forest management, forestry mm-hmm. issues. Mm-hmm. And that would be an interesting thing to do. There's some very large timber on that block. And it's interesting to be able to talk about it and their age and where they fit in the ecology. Mm-hmm. But I just wondered, in all the parks we have around here, ziplining is, if you do it the way they do it, it's extremely safe. Two cables, two hookups, and you're just locked in. So I've become aware of how safe it can be. Also, how thrilling it is for kids. The kids were just all over that park. And it's an attraction, and right now it seems to be, and it's, you can dismantle it, and nothing's left behind. It's basically pick up and go.
Yeah.
But I'd consider, increase the park and mm-hmm. let everyone think about it.
That's a good idea. Part of the grant, the language we used to try to make sure we didn't preclude zip lining or actually canopy education tours, I think is what the language we used. We said, yeah, I believe we said canopy education tours, and the idea was that you potentially do zip lining or, like you said, some sort of forestry education. We did reach out to UW Forestry to see what they thought of it, and they didn't seem super excited about it. It's close, but there's such bigger tracks around.
The name of the operation I went to was in Stanwood. It was called Canopy Tours Northwest, and they're easy to find.
Okay.
Easy to find, and it's owned by a family. They've owned for three generations. They talk about the history of the property, and that was a dairy farm at one time, and now they've consolidated. The fact that the conservation district ties into it gives them a lot of credibility for both organizations. King City very much involved with this if you want us to be there, I guarantee you that. But I think it'd be an interesting park situation, park amenity for a park. That's what I'm talking about, parks and amenity.
What about people movement? If you have to park on North Bend Way, you can zip line across the river right to the trail. How fun would that be? You think about solving a parking problem for the people on that road, right? The zip line right to the trailhead.
That was the problem getting across the off ramp on off ramps.
Yeah.
Just zip line
right into town.
Across yes, sir.
Is there any update on the disc golf course? We have it as Meadowbrook Farm.
Yeah.
Is that still?
That's still a proposal. There's a lot of proposals on here that are kind of a long ways out, but the idea is that along the Dyke Road, which is the you know, the gravel road that heads east off of Bulch, it's just a perfect setting for disc golf, where you've got kind of that savanna atmosphere of open mixed with some trees, and a good distance that would be perfect for an 18-hole course.
What about that Heartland property, the potential for this one?
I think so. We've talked about that too. Yeah, I think it could be. Again, we just have to make sure we stay within their development, allowed development, I think. And you just have to read the language and make sure it falls within an allowed use. But yeah, from the disc golf courses I've seen, I think they interact really well. You don't have to, so we do have some trails that we imagine will be going through the site, and I think it could interact well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of
The other one that I was thinking about for that was the Dahlgren park that they're going, that if the development goes through, the city will, it'll add a four-acre park to Tanner Landing, which is, I don't know how big it is, 40 acres?
40 acres.
Oh, I
said 40.
40?
Okay. Yeah.
Anyways, it'd be that. So I thought that was a spot that someone that knew something about disc golf could look at. So we'll be going through the planning, site plan process for that.
I didn't know if we want to put those other possible locations on here, or because I just noticed other things, other like the spray park, for example, like list a couple potential locations.
Does it? Oh, so that could be something where we pull out the
where is it referenced in the plan?
That forest
on page 25. Yeah, right there.
Yeah, 20,
so what if we pull disc golf out like that as a feature and then put potential parks where it could be?
Where's the disc golf at?
Halfway down. There's a bunch of Meadowbrook farms.
It's under Meadowbrook.
But is 25. Yeah, so having it just tied right to Meadowbrook, if that was pretty certain that that was going to be the best site, that might be better to target it right under Meadowbrook Farm. But if it's like, I wouldn't want it to be like, oh, Meadowbrook Farm doesn't want to do it there, oh, I guess.
They're interested. It's just it's going to require a level of improvement that's beyond what they can do just as a small volunteer board. So it needs to be a public project. And that's why it was put on here.
No, I think it's good as a possibility. That's all I'm mentioning. It's that, like those three we just discussed.
Yeah, why don't I just simply add under there, we just leave the rest of it the same, but other options for a public disc golf course, other locations for a public disc golf course could include.
Okay.
Dahlgren and Heartland. No objection? Good. Anything further? No? Thank you, Scott. I have a quick question because we're right around there when we were talking about the City Hall, and that was a cross out of Plaza. And I just wanted to know, is there still a Plaza design in process or downtown?
No.
No.
No, the idea was we're going to put our efforts to where the City Hall is. And the original idea for the downtown Civic Plaza was we were looking to purchase property that could go along with the future City Hall. So since we're not doing City Hall downtown, we're not looking to purchase that property. Preserve that.
There are still the North Bend Way street improvements that calls out a plaza on Main and North Bend Way, where if the streets were closed down, it would create a natural like gathering plaza area. So that is still, that's actually just got some funding.
Yeah, that's happening.
So that's picked up some.
It wasn't too long ago when
that'll be a welcome site for the residents.
Well, yeah.
Remember when Dick Burns had the Hills Are Alive concert on George's property? George we had, we went to the George Brown's property and had art and had a had 3 years of concerts playing in the rain, cats and dogs, the whole thing. But they had talked about the potential of closing down the road between the Shell Station and North Bend Bar and Grill and making that into a public plaza location with, I guess there was going to be a roundabout there and so on. It's going to make it really an open area for public thoroughfare. But I think the issue, of course, is with Bar and Grill with the problem of losing half the parking space. They were being recuperated in some way. But that does seem to be a very natural spot to have the train station and public coming off of the train and into the area and walking in a boulevard environment into the town. I think it'd be a genius stroke if somebody could figure that one out.
Actually, that's in here. So under William H. Taylor Railroad Park, you'll see
on page 25.
Yeah. So Sunview Community Park Trail Connection. Kind of under both of those, what we want, oh, it's the very top of the page there. So what we want to do is open up the park to the end of Ballarat there a lot better. Right now it's got this wall of bushes and trees, and you can't really tell there's a park there. And the idea is that we put a plaza there that would link the park to Ballarat, redo the parking along McClellan so that it's, we could do a one-way on the park by the depot, which would give you a lot more opportunity for parking. And then you could take a couple of spaces and trade from that away from right in front of the Bar and Grill and provide a crossing there and more of a plaza immediately in front of the Bar and Grill. So that's in here. And we provided that as a decision card this year to the council. They didn't take it up because of just limited funds, but they'll reconsider that at the mid-year budget cycle amendment. So.
Exciting.
Good deal.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
I'm good for some things once in a while.
I'm just thinking about you ziplining across the trees.
I just look at this and I get really excited by the amount, the number of opportunities that we have for preserving space and for providing open areas, a very, you know, just a wide range of different types of things. And the maps, too, I think really call that out when you realize exactly how much green space and preserved space we have. It's kind of exciting.
We are fortunate.
Not being in any way, shape, or form a member of the bike riding community, do ride a bike once in a while. I know that I, as a rider, I prefer to have wide trails. I don't like riding the trails that are less than 6 feet where I can get some clearance between opposing traffic and so on. It just, that makes me feel comfortable. I know it's very expensive to put a 6 foot wide right away for bikes and wheeled vehicles other than motorized. But I would encourage the city parks to budget for when they do these trails to do them upright, because I think we make them too meager. People have other places to go. You know, make the trails so good that the place they think about is Northfield. Mm-hmm. And that's where they'll start coming. If you make them difficult for them, they just have other places to go. That takes money, I know. But like Elizabeth's saying, right now we're in a position where we have the ground available, the trail space available. You can't get it back once it's used. You're not going to get it. You can never afford it. And so now's the time to go out and buy, getting it, you know, before it gets crossed up with something else. I still think the tenured trail idea is a hard sell for me because I just see it forever being trespassed into by third parties. I just think it's a sitting duck. I think it's going to be hard to maintain. I think it's going to be hard to keep it from junk free and keep it free of fence lines that get pushed out further than they think they can. You know, people are with their backyard fence lines. They think they can put into more. So I'm just encourage it just to think twice about putting money into that trail. We own it, but I wouldn't make it a primary trail. Honestly, I wouldn't.
Yeah, we don't own most of it.
Yeah.
It's still owned by BNSF.
I know that it is, but they're relying upon you to use it in some way so they get compensated. They're never going to reopen it. I mean, we all know that. They'll never reopen it for their use. But it's an expensive piece of property. They know that.
The way that we hope to address a lot of it is through development. So as development occurs, particularly residential development in the cottage zoning area, is via the applicant purchasing it from BNSF and then dedicating a part of it back to the city, and then they get a part of it to expand their development. So it's kind of a win-win.
It's not, but all respect to you and that concept, because it is a dollar-saving opportunity. But if you cut that 100-foot wide right away, including the slopes and the cuts, right now the trail's got about a 15-foot riding surface, but the rest of it's undeveloped. You take half of that, 50 feet out of that, and you're left with the north end side 50 feet. That's not usable. It's going to have to be built up into a trail. You're going to get about 5 feet of running surface, and the rest is just all slope. So you're not getting much from the city with that. I'd have them buy it all. Give you a check for the entire right of way and use it somewhere else. Period. Let them build to the edge of it. That's my advice.
Interesting point. I don't know if I agree, but.
Well, for a cash-strapped city, it's an opportunity.
All right, so.
Actually, the guy had been riding that trail in the morning hours. I probably wouldn't have come close to him.
Yeah. There's that. Anything further on the parks plan, on the amendments?
It's ambitious.
I just want to point out on page 26, the signage on primary trails indicating the trail name and direction and distances. Thank you for that. I'm guessing it would include some kind of name, so if a person needs help, that's a way for them to call and indicate where they are. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, one more
distance markers.
Comment, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I took note of the Tanner Road Shoreline Park restroom. That's about five houses from my house. Scott, you're closer to it than I am. Is there any more than the restroom there for that takeout point?
So as a part of the Sigali Tanner Road development, they're required to improve the right-of-way on Tanner Road there to provide some parking within the right-of-way for users there. Mm-hmm. And then they're providing a trail within that park down to the shoreline, but the primary whitewater access is still going to be the right-of-way that goes down to the river.
Yeah, that's still the best route down there. Mm-hmm. Take them kayaks down there, so on, straight to the water. But the restroom is a good idea. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to be a maintenance problem, but it's a good idea because these guys come out, they're dripping wet, it's a good place to change, and get back in the car and go home. But is the Tanner Road going to be improved out to urban?
Yeah, it'll be resurfaced as part of the development.
Widened and resurfaced?
Not widened in particular. They'll provide a added shoulder on one side for extra pedestrian safety.
That tells me you're not thinking that the development's going to draw much traffic down that road.
Well, in my efforts on Middle Fork Road improvements, there's a lot of different methodologies in road widths, and the most current one and the one that has been proven in a few cities to work is to not have wide, wide roads, is to have narrower roads, and that actually makes people slow down when they encounter other cars, and it actually keeps speeds from getting too high. So I'm going to just offer that as just food for thought. Just because the road's wider doesn't necessarily mean it's safer. I would address any chicanes or blind curves. Those are, to me, the real risk points. Make sure those get taken care of.
Are they going to square off the road with North Bend Way, or are they going to still have that angle?
If we're able to acquire the property from the property owner on the corner. So Public Works has been in conversations, just preliminary conversations with them about that. I don't know where that's gone. If they can, then yes, the developer is obligated then to square off the intersection. If not, then they'll provide some restriping to make it safer, but the angle would remain.
Seems to me that you can condemn it.
That's a much bigger condemnation, is it? Not something that
eminent
want
domain.
To do. Eminent domain, yeah.
You know, once it would be safer to have that square off. I'm telling you.
This is outside the discussion, but maybe the city also has enough right-of-way with North Bend Way to alter the road so it aligns better. I don't know if that's a possibility, but it's food for thought. Okay, back to our parks element. I really don't think I have anything further. Anybody? Mike, I want to thank you very much for addressing our comments and putting them in the findings. Really appreciate that.
As Chair, it looks like North Bend has become a wedding chapel capital of the Northwest.
You think so?
I think I count three wedding chapels in this plan. Millbrook Way.
I wonder if it said something about the city in which we live and what we're doing here with our time, that we can create such a beautiful, magical place that keeps some of its character, that it's a good place for that.
Well, they have chapel plans they use for Tollgate and the chapel for the Meadowbrook Farm. Building another chapel somewhere else.
There's a lot of demand.
Maybe get some hotels and it's pretty cool.
Well, if there's one built in Snoqualmie.
The one that we don't have that is apparently a popular thing right now is that they find a place, a park that has that, that also allows camping, and they come and they camp and they, and have kind of a, it's a little bit more low key, but everybody gets together, they camp, they have their big potluck, and they get married in whatever building or facility is available. We have a beautiful place. People want to come here and do that.
Well, Commission, I would like to entertain a motion on the amendments to the Parks Element, Parks Capital Facility Plan, and Parks Element Maps, with the amendments to the Heartland property on page 21 to be completed by staff. Do I have a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
And a second?
Second.
So a motion by Commissioner Ryan, a second by Commissioner Von Trapp. Final thoughts? Well, Mike, I just wanted to thank you. It'd be exciting to see all these things get completed in the next 5 years.
I would be super excited.
All right. With that, all those in favor of the amendments to the Parks Element, Parks Capital Facilities Plan, and Parks Element Maps, with the additional amendments to Heartland Property on page 21 to follow, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The Parks Element is approved and is unanimous. Item number 5 is the Planning Commission deliberation on the sewer and water amendments, North Bend Municipal Title 13. So last meeting, Lynn gave us a wonderful introduction, and we really didn't get into the document. So I'd like us to go, if we can, page by page and see if you have any comments. Is that okay with the commission?
It's 83 pages, Mr. Chairman.
I don't expect us to get through the whole thing. I don't want us to dwell on a page if there's no comments. We simply move forward, right? 10 seconds and go. Lynn, do you have anything you want to call out before we begin?
Well, in addition to what we talked about last week, this has been discussed more internally. And one thing to think about as you move forward, that is a hot topic in North Bend right now, is whether or not new septic is allowed. So right now our code reads that no new septics are, all new construction must hook up to sewer. There's a number of citizens, there's a few properties that are affected by this that are existing lots that that cannot construct homes on it because they can't get sewer to it. It's not feasible cost-wise. It's been discussed about adding some sort of a provision that would allow one-offs to, or to at least consider if we want to allow one-offs to be able to have septic. So for new construction.
Are these single lots, or are you talking about a subdivision, short plats?
Well, that's also what would need to be discussed. What I've heard it discussed internally would be one-offs, strictly one-offs, is what seems to be people are more comfortable with, and making sure there's some sort of a provision, actually, so you can't somehow piggyback and do a development, even if it's a small one. So at your public hearing at the next meeting, the 23rd, I know there's a few citizens that will come and be interested in that as well. So if you've had time to think about it a little bit beforehand.
So my question to staff is this. Mm-hmm. Under King County's current guidelines, mm-hmm. what size of a drainage field do you need for a 2.5 bath home? And that will help us understand whether or not how the lot size will match up with that. Because if you cannot fit it in 8,500 mm-hmm. square feet, then we would have to make a provision that it's only in constrained residential.
Well, but in order for a new septic to be in the city, this theoretical septic, it would have to be permitted through King County. It would have to meet all of the King County standards. So before they could even get it through the city, it would be something where they'd have to provide that. That's a good question. I don't know how the size.
I would add to that I think just from the perspective of us having an understanding of that, mm-hmm. We have a secondary issue of what does that mean if we're talking properties in a special hazard area, because there are going to be different requirements and drain fields are handled in a different way.
I would be on your side if we excluded those from that allowance.
Well, I think that what we're going to find is many of the properties that are affected right now by this issue of whether or not one-off septic should be somewhere allowed are going to be properties located in the special hazard area.
What's the term one-off?
A single lot development. A short plat would be four or less.
It's nine. So someone has a property and they want to build one house on it, and right now they're not able to because they're in an area that doesn't have sewer.
Last session, I hadn't read this thoroughly. I went off and looked at our space. I read this, and I'm totally satisfied with this document in terms of people who are at current OSS. They do not intend to expand their house. Mm-hmm. It's bedroom count that really drives it. I think bathrooms will bedroom count drives it. So in my case, I've got an existing residence on septic, and I'm going to expand. I'm allowed to get a waiver. It's unlikely that it's directed to disallow or London call me to hook up. We'll have a new sewer line right down Tanner Road. Others don't. They don't have a sewer line. I have to have one, so I go either way, but prefer not to. I don't have to. And I thought I was being forced to by this code, and I realized that I'm not. I, being all of us who have septic, if we just want to live and let live, we can live without sewer. No one's going to come and drive it down our necks. They have to have it. When I read the language, this language is more for developers. There's a lot of terms like builders and developers. And so I'm reading this language, and I'm going, well, this really isn't about myself first. I neighbor. It's about a developer who's coming in. They need to know the rules. They need to know where the hookups are, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, or, Dick, you make a great segue to my opening comment, which is on page 23 under 13.08.010. And we say the owner. And I'm wondering, should that be the builder or the owner? Who do we mean by owner?
Sorry, can you say again where you were looking at?
13.08.010.A, new construction. When it's new construction.
13.123
or
page 23?
Oh, the handwritten 23. Oh, page 2.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going by the handwritten number. I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't have the handwritten
numbers. I'm looking on last week's. This week's?
Page 2.
Sorry. Thanks.
I'll get with the program. So, under new construction, it says the owner of all new houses, buildings, or properties used for human occupancy. And when you're talking about install suitable plumbing facilities and connect with the city water system, is that really the person who's building the house, not the owner?
It's always the property owner that's responsible for permitting and for anything else having to do with improvements. And they may contract out with somebody to do that, but they're the responsible party as the property owner.
Okay.
No, it's to clarify, because I think still the owner is the developer.
Yeah, so if I buy 20 acres and I'm building these properties, whose responsibility is it?
The property owner. So if you're buying the property to develop it, you would still be the owner.
Yeah. Okay. The owner or developer. But if you're going to sell it to me, you can sell it to me on the provision I may have to hook up at a certain cost.
That makes sense. Okay. Thank you.
But because you're just building it, you won't be allowed not to have sewer. Mm-hmm. That became crystal clear to me. And it makes constantly good sense. Why wouldn't you have sewer hooked up to a line going down the street? My problem was, as a landowner who intends to make this my last home, feet up in the ground, I'm not ready to put in $40,000 and put a lien on my title to do that. Mm-hmm. I won't do that. I'll develop it into 4 lots before I do that. So I don't have to, because it does show it. And you know, I tried to use the last week's document. We had a code paragraph that says where you can find the stuff. And I went to it, and I couldn't open it up. It skipped it. For some reason, I couldn't get this. I couldn't get this graph showing, or something like this, where it talks about that on page 20.
So before we get there, I'm still on page 2.
Oh, geez. 2?
Yep. Under 13.08.040, water connection charge, we say 21 days. Are those calendar or business days? Can you please define them?
Those would be calendar days unless otherwise specified.
Where do I know that? I don't want somebody to change
unless
it to business days.
Unless it's specified as business days, it would be assumed to be calendar days. It's 3 weeks, so.
Alrighty. Anything else on page 2? Page 3.
See, I need to be a contractor to understand this. What would make me look on some requirements, this and that, minimums. I don't have that.
So I see you pointed out if it's still a correct reference for the 1985.
Right,
water
so we do
plan.
Have a new one that we're referencing now. I believe it's the 2010.
Okay.
Who is the ASI initial? I'm just curious.
That's our attorney.
Deputy attorney?
I don't know.
She's an attorney. Never cuts a line. Okay, anything on page 3? Page 4. Page 5. Page 6 or 7.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
It's in here somewhere, but it seems like we're going to fill out the code stuff. I came across the word easement used a lot in here, and evidently the sewer line easement that goes from the street into your property allows for public agency folks to walk that easement down to the hookup point. Am I reading that correctly? That makes it an easement for public inspection.
I would assume so. I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's a good question, which reminds me, Mark Rigos, our public works director, or an engineer is going to be at the next meeting for some of those more technical questions that they actually are the overseers of. A question like that, we could, if you note it down, we could make sure to ask them.
Well, that would suggest to me that I'm limited to doing anything on top of my property, on top of that easement, that might affect the water line. It doesn't quite say it here, but I'm imagining that in easement language, it would say something to that effect, that the easement is attached to the city or attached to the property.
I'm going to just rely on having our public works director here. I can tell you that's true if you have an electrical box that you can't plant anything in front of it, but I don't know about water lines under the ground.
Yeah.
Maybe you can, but you're limited to certain landscaping, right? Without deep roots. So write that down for next meeting.
It's in there.
Or you can send it to staff. And
yeah, it depends. We can see how many. I'll start noting them down if we want to ask him them in the meantime.
Okay, page 8. Seeing none, page 9. Page 10. I have one on page 10. Forbidding use of irrigation or sprinkling. The city reserves the right to make an order forbidding the use of water for irrigation or sprinkling purposes in the event of a water shortage. Now, to me, that's not very clear. Is this city water or is this from my rain barrel?
It's from city water.
Should we say city water? Because if I can irrigate with my rain barrel, I don't want the police officer arresting me for that.
I would say that's implied, Mr. Chair, because we're talking about resources.
Yeah. Well, this is water, Salah, but
too. Yeah, there's also the Salah water system. So,
and those could potentially change
public water.
I guess I would suggest that it's also implied in that this chapter is about the water system, so it wouldn't be describing something outside of that water system.
But there is a difference between city water and Salal water. Or does Salal provide all the city water? I think we have...
Salal provides water to some citizens of North Bend.
Yeah, but the city's got aquifers, right, that they draw from?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're right, there is a difference between the water. I have Salal water. Tastes better.
Well, I'm just, yes. Well, it's pure, but the gist that I'm getting at is, if you read this, do I know that it's clear that I can have a rain barrel and water my garden?
It's not metered, Gary, so I guess they don't. They won't know you have it.
But you have nosy neighbors. They call.
Oh my God! Yeah, it's not metered water, so you can use any. You can use it for any purpose you want.
Okay. Perhaps I'm not as trustful as all of you.
Well, it's not implying that I can throw a pump down to the river if I lived along the river and irrigate my... I mean, you're regulating that, right?
That's under a different regulation.
But that's not this, right?
Here's my thought on this one. One, someone could turn you in, but they're going to come out and say, oh, you're using your rain barrel, no problem. The city would only have the ability to enforce this on a water system they have control over. Therefore, I think that it is clear that when they're saying that they can do this, it has to be something that they have control over. They couldn't tell members of Salal to do the same thing had Salal not also put through a similar order.
Okay.
It's where they have authority.
I'm going on the whole premise, like whatever falls is supposed to recharge the aquifer, and if you're taking it away from that.
I was kind of wondering about that because there are those rumors that go around that you're not allowed to have rain barrels because the water belongs to the state.
Yeah.
So,
in a lot of the Southwest, that's the case.
Exactly. So.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that.
It blows my mind. Oh, the gallons that come off my gutters.
You're not allowed to collect it.
Seriously, this week I could have put 50-gallon barrel out there and it would have been filled in 1 week. And I could have watered the garden hole.
An hour this morning.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on then, page 11. Page 12. Page 13. 14. Sixteen or seventeen? There'll be one more meeting. Eighteen or nineteen?
And this is where I have one.
Okay.
And actually, this may not. This doesn't necessarily apply unless we move forward with discussion of making changes on those kind of one-off situations. When we look at this, I'm referring to 13.20-010 on King County regulations adopted, and whether or not that will become an issue in terms of whatever language that they have in place on sewage disposal systems with regard to septic. That would potentially require that we review that in terms of implications if it moves forward on talking about those other issues.
So are you thinking we need to make an addition or?
It's more of a that we need to be aware of if we're going to potentially be talking about making changes to allow those one-off uses of septic for new construction, since that appears to be something that is going to come up in conversation. We need to know what implications having that in the code will have for that, and whether or not we have to change that paragraph to explicitly exclude certain portions.
Got it.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I guess another that was pointed out, the 13.20.010, there was something I think got in the mail 6 months ago or more about what this is describing, King County regulators coming out and looking at septic systems occasionally and then certifying them. But I thought there was a public meeting and kind of some blowback and they decided to table it. Does this mean that it's back on and by regulation now? Or?
This code provision wouldn't be meaning that. This is one that has been pulled over from past code. I'm not aware of any changes in that. Have you?
No,
yeah.
I haven't heard of anything. But
right.
That's the county's process. So.
Yeah, I have been full inspection every year. Probably you too.
Mm-hmm. I've had an inspection every year.
You should.
I had one recently.
Usually Salal requires you to have a backflow inspection, just to make sure you're not getting water contaminated.
Is that because you're by the river or because you're at a certain elevation? So all residents who kind of border that same situation
you're
will have
that. Sure that your septic is not backing up into your water source. Contaminates the water.
And there are some provisions that require that those that have newer septic systems in the special flood hazard area, depending on the system chosen, have to be inspected on an annual basis.
Yeah.
on it. And there was a very big conversation about some changes. They were going to add an inspection fee to everyone that had a septic system that was discussed and didn't really go anywhere, but I don't think it's completely gone. It's just being reworked and could come back at some point in the future. So that's something that may have some implications if we discuss that. And we'll want to make sure that we don't adopt a code that is then contradictory to what it is that we're trying to do.
So, and just to be clear, when we're talking about septic, we defer to King County's codes, regulations, what they're doing. We're not inspecting or permitting it. So they need to, an applicant needs to first come to the city to modify theirs today with an approval from King County Department of Health.
Point of personal privilege, I'll just say that while as a homeowner that has a septic system and believe in a well-run septic system and believe I've benefited from the insight of King County's website and guidance, I am disappointed on their Brightwater facility, how it is reducing or releasing raw sewage into the water system. And I think with a brand new system that they ought to have had a solution for stormwater. And I think our city is wiser for that. And I appreciate our planning staff who recognizes the natural drainage abilities of some of our areas of our city. And appreciate the opportunity to update this document where we can allow for septic systems in the proper places. That's all.
Anything else on page 40?
40?
19. Wishful thinking.
Yeah,
I was like, you kept thinking we have 80. We have 80 pages. I'm halfway there. Okay. So page 41, and I believe this would be the section in which if we wanted to make any updates to that we would give you some guidance in. This would be the connection to public sewer required.
Right. And we've been working and discussing this with our city attorney because we want to make sure that the language is carefully crafted by someone with legal guidance. So I wouldn't spend too much time thinking about it. I'd love some suggestions, but we don't need to craft the language.
My first comment is on existing structures, a 200-foot close proximity. If you're in Wood River, maybe that is kind of close. I think that's a great distance. Like, it doesn't seem close. I mean, how much does it cost for every 10 feet of pipe or 100 feet of pipe? I mean, if a homeowner has to spend $30,000, that to me is an unreasonable ask. So I'm wondering, how much does it cost per 100 or some measurement that we could come up with maybe a more equitable distance that is acceptable to somebody to hook up?
I'm not sure what you already have a septic system.
And I'll never be able to get on sewer.
Yeah, and you're never going to be required to get on sewer.
But I will be required.
Unless you want to add a bedroom to your house.
No. If my system fails, though, I will have to redo the entire system under King County's new code.
But I think your question is...
Well, I'll have to redo my tanks. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's...
And my drainage field.
Of course you will, yeah. If you bust your car up, you can fix it. It's going to fix it for you.
But I'm saying I have to add a whole new tank system.
You do. Yeah. And your drain field runs out. You'll have to find a new area for your drain field.
Well, I have to dig it out and redo the dirt, drain field.
And what do you do in the meantime?
Or remove all of your plumbing on the other side.
But yeah, those are all costs on you as part of your property. Right.
But you're questioning if 200 feet is potentially too, it should be closer than that because that's a large cost burden, is your question?
Yes, that is a cost barrier.
Yeah.
And so if we want to encourage participation, then I'm fearful that that's going to be a huge amount of money for 200 feet. Maybe we can find an equitable distance.
Here, you know, Tanner Road down to my house is probably 400 feet. It's 10 feet, it's on the center line of the road. So it's well within 200 feet of my line, of my property line. I have 20 feet of free line before they're on my line. So now I have to go 400 feet down to my house to hook up.
That's really expensive.
But this is, and if the existing sewer line is located within 200 feet of the property line, so you wouldn't have to just go your 400 feet. You would have to add an additional 200 feet. That's 600 feet of pipe.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's worth it for anybody, you know, unless you're compelled because you, the river has risen and now your drain field is part of the river. You know, I don't know what would compel you to adopt. And maybe that's a purpose that we don't want everybody on the sewer. I don't know. So those are questions, and I just want to know what it is cost-wise about what that we should expect.
Our public works director is really good at that cost estimating for facilities, so yeah. I think that'd be a good question for him when he's here at the next meeting.
You know, it drives me into a horrible place is the language in this document that has to be there. It talks about how the city can basically take care of the house and they really make it really onerous that you miss your payment and all this stuff. Saying what kind of city is this? We're talking about rural lifestyle, unicorns, all that. And we've got this language here basically says you're going to pay us monthly or whatever, we're going to put a lien on your property.
I think they probably have to have that in there because at some point somebody, the language wasn't there and somebody decided they didn't need to pay me.
Yeah. It scares the hell out of you, would you think? Mm-hmm. You might have to go through.
So the other point on, did you want to make a comment first?
It was actually just on 20. I actually really like the table because I think that it makes it easy to figure it.
Right.
So we have all of this really technical language, and if you're someone who just is a homeowner and is trying to figure out, well, what does this stuff all mean to me, I think that table actually makes it a lot more straightforward of, oh, so if that happens, I'm not going to lose my house because I have to hook up the sewer a mile away.
I saw that table. That's why I'm a different man today.
It was more of a kind of a kudos for that one because I do think it gets the point across in a way that makes it more accessible to someone who's like big-eyed and going, oh my gosh, what does all this mean?
Yeah. So. Good. Thanks. Yeah, our attorney worked to make it more clear.
So I know you talked about one-off, but why not about existing structures? And that kind of goes to my distance of pipe. And I'm thinking about if you're not located in a flood hazard area and you don't border a river or a lake, then you should be allowed to maintain your septic system if you're so many feet above the water table. I don't know what so many feet means, if it's 50 or 100 or 400. How much filtration do you have to be safe? But I'm thinking there should be a provision for that. If we're thinking about making provisions, that would be one I would like to consider.
And you are allowed to maintain your existing septic.
If I add a bedroom.
Oh, expanding.
Yeah.
That's a good point for our discussion.
You are allowed to maintain it within expansion. I think what it does not allow is when your septic fails, that you can't replace the septic at that point. If you're within 200 feet, you're going to have to connect.
No, on this one, you have to, if you're within 200 feet, you cannot expand your septic.
You can't expand.
Without connecting.
Right, at that point you'd have to connect. So that's a good
So I'd like to open up to the commission. Any thoughts on that? And those are my thoughts for conditions, is that you're not along a river, you're not on a lake, and that you're a suitable height above the water table.
I do like the table. I don't know. I guess I have a couple questions on it. It's hard to collect my thoughts totally.
Before you go off on a different, I can make a motion, but I want to just get the commission's thought. Is this something that we should entertain or not first? If we should allow people who are on septic to continue on septic, even though they make an addition where they have to update their septic or it fails. And
expand.
They expand.
I do think there would be some logical consistency if we are going to open the door to potentially allowing this one-off for new construction to review that as part of it. Because if you're allowing an entire house to go in, potentially,
But that's also under the same test of, is it over 200 feet?
Okay.
So if it's within 200 feet, a new house would have to connect.
Okay,
as well.
So it's the 200 foot.
Well, that's what we have to consider, right, is if it's one house being built, and even though they're within 200 feet, would we allow them a septic system?
Part of the Growth Management Act is that it directs cities to provide urban infrastructure for urban development. And I think the intent is that you need to be able to fund your sewer system to support the city as a whole. And to be able to fund that sewer system, you need to have new recruits to the sewer system. So I think part of that 200-foot threshold is to ensure that we are getting connections to the sewer system over time to be able to fund those improvements necessary to keep it operational.
My observation is that Tanner Road, the line went in down where the pull-out point is. It stopped right there. It's where there's the wire mesh gate that goes in easily into the Scully property. The landowners on Tanner Road that need the sewer never got the line down there. They're on half-acre lots all the way down to the cul-de-sac. There's about 50 homes on half-acre lots that live on the river. They should have sewers in their property, get the civics out of there. The sewer line stopped right past all the one-acre lots. You know, all the homes from the beginning of Tanner Road all the way down to the pull-out point with the kayaks. So those are all one-acre homes on septic. Further down the road, they're more tightly fitted. Half-acre lots, they need sewers, so they don't have the sewer line down there. I think that was rather crazy to me that line was always intended to be only for Sagali for their development, and if we could hook onto it, fine. But I never got an invitation from the city to hook up to it, or my neighbors didn't either, so it was like they just ran the line down there to get Sagali hooked up.
Is that the U then?
Yeah.
So I would assume that those properties didn't have the 60%.
Interest
approval of it, yeah. Which is why I didn't go down there.
Wait, so the property owners have to agree to tax that?
60% of the assessed property value, property owners have to be on board.
That's what I'm thinking, that John Day and Sagali was at 60%.
They might.
And all the rest have sucked into it. I don't know how that goes.
Kind of something to think about from a planning point of view, too, about the one-offs is you'll see the neighborhoods that don't have sewer to them. Kind of think about how that would, from a land use perspective, start to change some of those neighborhoods for, and I'm not saying for better or for worse, but there's a number of neighborhoods that don't have sewer that do have either homes that would potentially be redeveloped or vacant lots that you would see some infill from the existing lot, and that could be a good thing, but it also then might be further down the road when people will be wanting to get sewer there, so it could prolong the public infrastructure coming down there. So it kind of has I think some pros and cons.
So I would go along those lines, whether it's an existing structure or a new structure, existing one that expands, that you're allowed to have septic provided you're not next to a river, you're not next to a lake, that you're whatever height you come up with above the water table.
I would lead us away from us being the ones that regulate the septic again, because King County does that and that's their purview, as opposed to us writing those regulations.
Another suggestion is we are definitely not the experts on sewer or septic. We're going to have our public works director here.
You're the expert on everything, Mike.
So before you make any concrete recommendation, right, I would suggest that you wait to discuss that with the public works director, who's going to be a lot more familiar.
Think of any other questions?
Right, but this is a nice time for you to be able to more freely discuss it before, yeah. I suspect they'll be public at your next meeting.
I would like, if the language isn't in there, at a minimum, those of us who are on septic, we should be willing and ready to stand for inspection once a year on the efficiency of our system. There goes that would satisfy the city right off the bat, I'm sure, in the county. The county's working on behalf of the DOE for the water quality, but I think that we stand for inspection once a year, make sure our line is safe. There's no reason to worry about that. We will be maintaining our system to make sure it is adequate for the inspections, and we get shut down. So I would encourage no language that would say we're required to go on sewer provided your septic system passes inspection. That kind of thing. That puts the onus on the landowner. It should be anywhere on the landowner, but it shouldn't be forced on the landowner. If the landowner is able to maintain their system, that should keep them in the clear.
Yeah, I just have a couple comments, as I mentioned before on the table. Questions, clarifications. So I think one of them was addressed in the comment from the last meeting, is the expansion and no increase in bedrooms. And I just didn't understand that, because it was like if you expanded part of your kitchen or something like that, also right. You hook up to the sewer, like that it makes no right. sense to me. So they have like a little superscript 6 or whatever that I think covers it. If it's more than 40% of the existing footprint, then you would have to connect to the sewer. So that's reasonable. If it's an expansion, I don't, the scenario is much different than what I would have thought, though. Let's say you add like a living room, maybe pop up your roof or something, and add like a little living room up there that didn't have a bedroom. And you're not like relocating the septic drain field. That's kind of an extreme scenario there. Then that would, you still would not have to connect to the public sewer, I believe. If you just expanded your...
It's the number of flushes.
Yeah, that's how I think it should be, but the way it was originally written, it was not that way. It just said any expansion.
Yeah.
And it's talking about the septic system is where the expansion word comes from. So if you have to expand your septic system to accommodate new bedrooms, because that's what it's based off of.
Okay.
So right here, it's talking about your septic system, not your home.
Okay, so it should, if it said like, so if someone actually did expand their septic, then not meaning expansion of their home or something. I guess I was reading it.
So if they wanted to do an addition, for example, and it added a couple bedrooms, and we would require that they provide for us from King County Department of Health something that says their septic is sized for that. If it's not and they need to expand it, right now this table would say if you are within 200 feet, you would have to hook up to sewer then.
Okay, so I'm feeling more like Dick is now feeling better about the table. That clarifies it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, I don't know if you guys can answer this, but as far as the failing septic, I read a little bit, in the table I read failing OSS, then connection to public sewer required. But if you read the number 5, then it says if the city gets a receipt of a letter of failing, then you either connect to the public sewer or repair the septic. So it should be.
What's the number 5? Sorry.
It's on page 21.
There are little descriptors there.
Yeah.
So it doesn't say just connect to public sewer. Sewer required, it says repair or connect to the public sewer.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yep.
Yeah, so it shouldn't include.
That's just another thing where I guess, as a septic owner, probably other people would feel that way. Where I just, when I read that, my first thought on the table was like, wow, you guys really want us to connect to the public, to the sewer, you know? And I understand on certain circumstances, yes. But the way I think people could really look at this and say, okay,
you know,
we're all hooking up to the sewer. That's just the way it is.
But if you have a cracked pipe or you have a pump that fails, then you should be allowed to repair it, right? It's not a total failure of the system. It's a mechanical breakdown.
We kind of tip our hand on this whole thing, is because the whole idea is to get enough revenue to pay for that new plant down the street there in North Bend. The more ratepayers they get, the more they're going to be able to for that new system, but I'm not contributing to that system. My fluid doesn't get served by the city's discharge system, so there's no reason for me to pay if I don't use it.
But there's lots of other developments in the city that are also not served by the sewer, so this is going to impact them, whether or not they're going to be required to hook up and under what conditions. And I think what Scott's bringing up is a good point. If you have simple repairs, then that doesn't mean you hook up to the sewer system.
No, that's why I'm agreeing with that.
So is that
the way it's written. Is that correct?
This is what this is really how the table says.
No, the table says a little stricter, but the
we do reckon we need to reconcile the difference in language there.
Well, I'm not sure. We should think about that, because today you can, even though our code's actually a little more restrictive than this today, you can still do regular maintenance repair. You can repair a failing system today.
Now, when there's a failure, like, because I really don't know, is it a failure of the drain field where it doesn't function as it was intended, or is it, what constitutes a failure that you would be required, I guess, would be an example to have here?
Well, it says that it's upon receipt of a letter from King County Health Department that the system is failing. So I'm presuming that they're going to look at that and see, oh, is it just a little pump? It's not failing. Or they'll determine you've got enough things that this is a failure.
And I guess one, I don't know enough, I don't know if anyone in the room does, but with septic, I mean, is it something where you can kind of maintain it for many, many years if you kind of, I mean, is there a point where that septic is, like, done and you can't, like, kind of repair or replace something and it's, like, you know, or can you, through proper maintenance, continue it for many, many years?
The problems my neighbors have encountered is drain fields, mm-hmm. and whether or not they were done properly or whether or not they just fail.
Sometimes it's there. So my understanding, and I'm sure Mark can probably answer this with great more clarity and accuracy, but my understanding is that most septic drain fields have a lifetime of 50 years, at which point they're going to have to be replaced.
Did you say 50?
50. But as with many things, it's totally dependent upon care and use and how heavily they've been used. So we actually have large areas of the city on septic that are in that, probably beyond that age range, are coming up on it very quickly. Mm-hmm. So this could become a significant mm-hmm. issue as it goes forward, depending on where sewer lines happen to be. Mm-hmm. And whether or not we have sewer anywhere near some of the larger kind of mini housing developments that spring up. The other thing that I've had happen that I've not personally but have spoken to you about is where they have an old tank that cracks. Mm. And in that point, you're going to get that failing grade. And that can be care, that can be age, it can be defect of some kind of material. Or you plant a tree too close and it decides to really do it,
yeah.
which happens to be one of the stories that I've heard.
Yeah. Got to maintain it. Okay, well, we definitely discussed a bit on page 20 and 21. Anything further?
Just to clarify what we just talked about, I have a note to add something about regular maintenance repairs to be
upkeep. Is considered not a mm-hmm. failure.
So we can look into some language for that.
Okay. Anything else on page 21? 22? 23? 24? Twenty-nine. 8:30. My only question on like page 30 and 31, when I think about our waterways and the fecal contamination that is documented, should we have some kind of incentive program for people who border the rivers and have, you know, a certain age septic system or something like that? Is there a way, not only is it low income, but just have a way to encourage those who are at risk of the most contamination?
I guess you mean like in the floodplain?
Any river system.
Well, how close to the river?
Bordering.
Meaning in the floodplain?
Bordering a river, yeah. The water table is such that they mingle.
What's interesting about North Bend is we actually have a lot of areas that have a higher groundwater table that are further away from the river than the ones next to the river. So if something's going to infiltrate straight down, there's... Oh, that's an older one. There's some areas like Phoenix Plaza, the explosion site, where it comes up to just a few feet. And then you'll have someone next to the river that actually it's a lot lower because of the levee or just the way... So... if you're
so your preference would be it would be based on groundwater level first?
I guess it's more a point that proximity to the river may not, and this is more a suspicion, proximity to the river may not mean your family system's going to hit groundwater sooner than somebody that just has a high groundwater table.
My impetus is because the Department of Ecology measures the fecal coliform levels in our rivers. And so that's where I can see how it comes and goes. And if it's above our wastewater treatment plant, it's certainly, you know, something. So I don't know. I certainly agree with you on groundwater.
Yeah.
And that becomes, again, looking at King County's rules and regs and figuring out what the safe distance is between groundwater and septic drainage fields. So I'll just add a note here that incentive for river border or.
And we'll have to look into this, but I think Snoqualmie may do something like that. They did a study a number of years ago that was looking into what's causing the pollution in Kimball Creek, and they found that 99% of it was leaking septics. And we'll have to look. Maybe something that they have in place as a similar incentive.
Okay. Yeah, that would be great.
I would wonder if the language needs to be not necessarily then specific to proximity to the river, but by some estimate of risk of entering the water.
Or evidence of contamination or failure or evidence of leaking or, you know, whatever their... I'd like to see their document if you could, like, send out a link or something. Or it's called Kimball Creek?
The Kimball Creek Water Quality Study is on that area.
Thanks, Mike.
I don't know if it'll go anywhere, but it's just recollection.
Mm-hmm. Every document, you know, is pretty much new that you get to learn about all this infrastructure. So keep digging and digging. Okay, anything else on page 31? Moving on to 32. 33. 34, 35, 36, 37, 38,
40. Mike, would you like to entertain adding in days under D and specify that they're calendar days unless otherwise noted?
We could do that, if that's the direction from the commission.
Anybody agree, disagree?
I don't object.
So to add the word days.
Days and specify calendar days unless otherwise noted.
I make no objection.
I mean, it would be one thing if it was business days unless otherwise noted, because then you're getting more time, but calendar days are limited. So I want to make sure that people know that they're not counting business days. Late payments. Okay, page 41, 42, 43, 44.
Carry on the calendar days thing.
Yes,
just thinking about that. Nobody's going to look for days in a definition. So I would suggest if you want to add calendar days, just put it directly in that section of the code. That way you're just reading it.
Very fine. Or if you just want to change it to business days and then add a different number, that would be the equivalent. Because we don't, for SEPA or for other notices, we don't call out calendar days anywhere that I can think of. But yet, that's how we count. So if you start to, if we do call out calendar days, then we'll have to start.
I don't know which one it is. I just want to note which one it is so there isn't any ambiguity. And when I'm talking about a late payment or so many days late and you send a foreclosure notice, I want to know how many days.
So that was back on page 2 at the bottom of the page. So it says within 21 days, we can just add in calendar days.
I get my check in 20 days and you say 21, but it was calendar days, and I was thinking business.
I hope we don't have that conversation.
Listen, if they're not going to get
it's the little thing.
Then I think they're not going to condemn for a right for a proper street line. They're not going to take it out. So.
Just on page 48, I'm noticing a lot of these abbreviations are used for the definitions, so would it make sense to list those first as opposed to after?
Yeah, since it's an A, move it to the A section?
No,
or
just
in the beginning of
like
the
a section prior to, you know, so
prior
after
definitions.
Administration, then do abbreviations and then lead into definitions, because another part of the definitions use the abbreviations.
Yeah, that would make sense.
So moving it to the start of the definition section, not the start of the...
Not below it.
Okay. Or like a pre-business section prior to...
Okay.
So switch the section.
Good call. Okay, page 49, 50, 51. Okay, does anybody have anything else? do not.
I do not. Okay.
So, looking up King County guidelines and Kimball Creek will be my two actions. This document, next meeting, we have a public hearing?
Correct. We have a public hearing. Okay. I believe it's February 23rd.
And are we doing a public hearing on the cottage as well?
No. I'm not sure. Jenna's working on that one. I'm not sure.
That was our next step. That's fine. I just could be busy.
I don't know if it was noticed or not. Not
sure. I haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah, so great perk getting through this. That's a lot of a document. I would come, you know, just keep thinking about your thoughts on the one-offs, because I know there's people that will be interested in talking about it, and any other questions that you have for Mark. I'll give him a heads up on some of these that we've talked about so he can
look at
come and know, right?
Yeah.
And come with some things. If he sends anything back to me before the meeting, I'll certainly forward that along to you in the hall.
I'm wondering, too, as part of the discussion, if we move into the one-offs, I don't even know if it's even possible to do this, prefacing this question, is since we talked very clearly about the fact that getting everyone on sewer is in part about funding the infrastructure, beyond the public health potential ramifications of failing systems contaminating our water supply, is there a way to be able to quantify the impact of moving to allowing the one-offs so that we have an idea of what the financial impact would be of that kind of not
question?
And I don't even know if it's possible to do, because it would mean identifying properties. That
right. I think that's a great question. It would be helpful to know, and I'll bring it up.
We need to think about that.
Right. I'll bring it up with Mark and see if he has any thoughts as to it. I don't know the answer.
Good question. Yeah. Take one, pass it down. I think that's enough. How are you guys? Okay, so item number six is a proposal on this resolution for a new downtown mixed-use zone, and I'm going to give everybody a minute to read it before I speak. So the motion to approve this resolution... before I make that motion.
Done our work for us. I love it. All the warehouses, even.
Sorry about the spacing. I wasn't pretty.
No.
It looks great. Makes it easy to read.
So, do you have a question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But we can get to it, because it's actually a date on here, so go ahead.
Okay. So, if everybody's had a minute to read it, then I will go ahead and make a motion to approve the resolution to the new downtown mixed-use zone.
Is it keys? I don't know if I've seen this before. So
you haven't? I just wrote it.
Okay.
So there's a motion, and I need a second. Yeah. Motion and a second by Commissioner Gildersleeve. First, I want to just speak to the motion. I know that we approved the change in the zoning out at Exit 32, where the first low-income housing could be built. The City Council made some changes that really impacted their ability to meet a bigger demand.
And in the council meetings, multiple times, the council has talked about sprawl and growth and where growth should happen being in the downtown. At the same time, there are restrictions that seem to be in place that is not encouraging that development. And where development is happening is outside where they would prefer it to happen. So I think it is our duty to take this on and figure out why and make the code that rectifies that.
So I'd like to provide a couple clarifications. Yeah. So the opportunity for providing work program, it does come largely at this time of the year, but it's through the docket process. And the docket process formally closed in October. So this is something that we'd want to consider with Jenna, because I know there's a lot of work ahead in the year. And you guys will want to see that. And I know that staff needs to see that and consider what has to happen and then what's higher priority of what could happen. And I think that's something that we're going to be bringing to the Planning Commission as well, to see what it is that you want to take up.
I hear what you're saying, and I agree that we have to have a comprehensive plan. That said, this should go to council, and they should be making that decision whether or not they agree with this, and it gets put on that plan. And when it happens is up to them. So with that discussion, yes?
Was Rock Creek really 83 that?
It wasn't Rock Creek, it was snow.
I'm pretty, well, Rock Creek.
I found
there
it on the King,
some
King County.
That have been built, I think, since then. In our.
Do you mean specifically as affordable housing?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I think
under King County website, that's what I found, was okay. Those snow, the snow valley.
Yeah, I don't think Rock Creek is considered affordable housing. Yeah.
The Sideview apartments are, but they are older.
Okay. So just to clarify, we have the downtown commercial zone. And so this is a proposal to have an overlay or some type of.
I would like to have the discussion with this commission and interested parties who might build this, what their barriers are, where it makes sense to do this, and then apply that either overlay or zone to those areas.
Gotcha.
I don't think it has to be on North Bend Way, but I think it has to be within that 5-minute walkability area, mm-hmm. and we create what could be a downtown, you know, hub.
Like in that cottage area that's proposed, would that be?
I don't want to even specify that. I want us to have that discussion of where it makes sense. You talk about, you know, if it comes in where people want taller buildings. Well, I certainly don't want to put that on the north side of North Bend Way, because then you're obstructing our mountain view, right? So it becomes south side. Or how far away from North Bend Way can it be before it doesn't obstruct? You know, there's all those discussions I think we should have, find out what the barriers are. But I think this is what Dick was saying, is how can we actually do some planning and think about our city and how we can solve this problem.
I like it.
Yeah, I like the idea.
I like the idea, I guess. I don't know about the increased height necessarily. Mm-hmm. I like our low town at this point, but the overall concept is good. I think it's something I brought up. I think a lot of people agreed in that cottage zone to have everything, the $650,000 house is, that's one demographic, so it's not ideal to just have one type of, and I know that's a new home, and if you're a starter, you can buy the fixer-upper, and maybe that's the way you go.
The one in Redmond's for sale was built in 2004, and that's 600.
Yeah, something. What you want to be. What makes sense to me is that the affordability ties in with the density factor, the downtown area, and the services, and, you know, you have mm-hmm. community services downtown, you have access to alternative.
Yeah.
It's transportation.
And so I like
it
when you say
your kids closer to the schools. Mm-hmm. We have elementary schools.
And restaurants. Yeah.
And restaurants. Not restaurants as much, but I think that services are available closer in the downtown area. That's where it should happen. Mm-hmm. At least we should be having the discussion.
Yeah. So that's basically what this is to send it on to the council to get it on the agenda. So any further discussion? All those in favor of approving the new downtown mixed-use zone resolution, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes. It is unanimous.
So, Gary, I'm going to have to talk to Jen about how this goes to council. I think it would be a recommendation from the Planning Commission.
Yeah.
And it's probably not going to be in this form, because the Planning Commission would not approve a resolution. The council approves a resolution.
The Planning Commission approved this resolution to give to City Council. The City Council can draft their own resolution that comes back to us with their vision on it. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is what, and I can enter it in the public record at the next council meeting and just state that. So. Okay. With that, go to the order.
Not me tonight.
No. Valentine's Day is coming up. Sienna's first Valentine's Day.
Yeah. I'm just going to remember this one forever, man.
Yeah, we got to get the cute outfits. You got to do the pictures.
Yeah. Yeah. I only have add a couple hundred photos to the collection.
Mm-hmm. I will say that it was one of the best things that I did for my sister early on is, you know, you get into this phase of doing all these photos on your cell phones, and then they don't go anywhere. And they have the ability to, I load them all up. And I don't even think that company exists anymore, but put them all in there and just print them in a little flip book.
Yeah. Shutterfly has them.
Borrowed the phone to virtually get some. And then ones that I had just, and some of them are horrible and blurry, but she has them all.
Yeah. I created like kids' first year, and I took pictures every month. And then you put the start and the finish of the year and their birthday. It's amazing the difference. Mm-hmm. 1 year changes a lot. I tried to do it for the second year, but then I started failing after that. So.
It seemed to the order, going back to my viewing of the City Council meeting on TV, I don't know, I can't see it all here, the dialogue going on. But it just seemed to me an interesting the moments happen where the public spokesperson was asking, invited him to make his comments, and didn't engage anybody on the council. They just listened and didn't engage them. I don't even understand if they're not going to engage the public when they make a comment, particularly if it's clearly obvious they want the comments so they can react to it, and they don't do anything about that. It bothers me that the City Council is not really engaged.
I wouldn't say they're not engaged. They're thinking about it. When you're listening to something for the first time, you're having to process it and think about how it relates to other things. It may generate further discussion.
I appreciate that. I also had a discussion with Commissioner Elwood. The first thing I'll share with you is that he told me that they're trying to be more proactive and respond instantly when somebody makes a comment. And that is just a work in progress where they've just kind of started on that initiative. So I'm hoping that their communication will be better than councils have been in the past. The other thing that Council Member Elwood and I talked about was the Planning Commission and City Council getting together. He appreciates that idea and is going to float it around the rest of the council and get us together for a meeting.
Mm-hmm. Should we also have the, I always forget, the other commission, the economic Partners. Development?
Mm-hmm. Economic development is two city council and
one
citizen.
One
city.
There's one city council member on it.
Oh, one.
Mm-hmm. There's five people all together.
There used to be two.
Mm. Only one shows up to the meetings. I don't know what's in the code.
We used to have a city council member attend our meetings. Why is that stopped?
They changed the format when they had specific representatives of each commission, and I think the intent of that was that the commissions feel free to make recommendations up without feeling like there's somebody in their midst that's kind of driving the show. It would give a little more autonomy to the commissions without having a council member on it.
Yeah, they persist to have one on the economic.
Yeah, that was what I heard from when that change occurred several years ago.
Wonderful. Let's try to say anything.
So, anyway, don't want to overcommit. Brennan said that he would float that around city council, so hopefully that will happen. My goal, I guess, would be to make sure that whatever they're hearing from the public, we make sure we're getting that clear message, because if they're hearing stuff that we don't, then we're passing things that set them up for a disconnect, right? And so maybe there's a reason why some of our things aren't getting put forward, and I want to just make sure that we know what they know. With that, a motion to adjourn. And a second?
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Gildersleeve, second from Commissioner Heller. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Commission is adjourned, 9:24. Thank you all for your time. Hey, Scott, so there is that place for you.